The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo, continuing in Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Chapter 27, Hatha Yoga, page 528. There are almost as many ways of arriving at samadhi as there are different paths of yoga. Indeed, so great is the importance attached to it, not only as a supreme means of arriving at the highest consciousness, but as the very condition and status of that highest consciousness itself, in which alone it can be completely possessed and enjoyed while we are in the body. That certain disciplines of yoga look as if they were only ways of arriving at samadhi. All yoga is, in its nature, an attempt and an arriving at unity with the Supreme. Unity with the being of the Supreme, unity with the consciousness of the Supreme, unity with the bliss of the Supreme, or, if we repudiate the idea of absolute unity, at least some kind of union, even if it be only for the soul to live in one status and periphery of being with the divine, salyukya, or in a sort of indivisible proximity, samipya. This can only be gained by rising to a higher level and intensity of consciousness than our ordinary mentality possesses. Samadhi, as we have seen, offers itself as the natural status of such a higher level and greater intensity. It assumes naturally a great importance in the yoga of knowledge, because there it is the very principle of its method and its object to raise the mental consciousness into a clarity and concentrated power by which it can become entirely aware of, lost in, identified with true being. But there are two great disciplines in which it becomes of an even greater importance. To these two systems, to Raja Yoga and Hatha Yoga, we may as well now turn. For in spite of the wide difference of their methods from that of the path of knowledge, they have this same principle as their final justification. At the same time, it will not be necessary for us to do more than regard the spirit of their gradations in passing. For in a synthetic and integral yoga, they take a secondary importance. Their aims have indeed to be included, but their methods can either altogether be dispensed with or used only for a preliminary or else a casual assistance. Hatha Yoga is a powerful but difficult and onerous system whose whole principle of action is founded on an intimate connection between the body and the soul. The body is the key, the body the secret both of bondage and of release, of animal weakness and of divine power, of the obscuration of the mind and soul and of their illumination, of subjection to pain and limitation and of self-mastery, of death and of immortality. The body is not to the Hatha Yogin a mere mass of living matter, but a mystic bridge between the spiritual and the physical being. One has even seen an ingenious exegete of the Hatha Yogic discipline explain the Vedantic symbol Om as a figure of this mystic human body. Although, however, He speaks always of the physical body and makes that the basis of his practices. He does not view it with the eye of the anatomist or physiologist, but describes and explains it in language which always looks back to the subtle body behind the physical system. In fact, the whole aim of the Hatha Yogin may be summarized from our point of view, though he would not himself put it in that language, as an attempt by fixed scientific processes to give to the soul in the physical body the power, the light, the purity, the freedom, the ascending scales of spiritual experience which would naturally be open to it if it dwelt here in the subtle and the developed causal vehicle. To speak of the processes of Hatha Yoga as scientific may seem strange to those who associate the idea of science only with the superficial phenomena of the physical universe, apart from all that is behind them. But they are equally based on definite experience of laws and their workings, and give, when rightly practiced, their well-tested results. In fact, Hatha Yoga is, in its own way, a system of knowledge. But while the proper yoga of knowledge is a philosophy of being put into spiritual practice, a psychological system, this is a science of being, a psychophysical system. Both produce physical, psychic, and spiritual results. But because they stand at different poles of the same truth, to one, the psychophysical results are of small importance. The pure psychic and spiritual alone matter. And even the pure psychic are only accessories of the spiritual, which absorb all the attention. In the other, the physical is of immense importance. Oops. In the other, the physical is of immense importance. The psychical, a considerable fruit. The spiritual, the highest and consummating result. But it seems for a long time a thing postponed and remote, so great and absorbing is the attention which the body demands. It must not be forgotten, however, that both do arrive at the same end. Hatha Yoga also is a path, though by a long, difficult, and meticulous movement to come up to the Supreme. All yoga proceeds in its method by three principles of practice. First, purification. That is to say, the removal of all aberrations, disorders, obstructions brought about by the mixed and irregular action of the energy of being in our physical, moral, and mental system. Secondly, concentration. That is to say, the bringing to its full intensity and the mastered and self-directed employment of that energy of being in us for a definite end. Thirdly, liberation. That is to say, the release of our being from the narrow and painful knots of the individualized energy in a false and limited play, which at present are the law of our nature. The enjoyment of our liberated being, which brings us into unity, or union with the Supreme, is the consummation. It is that for which yoga is done. Three indispensable steps, and the high, open, and infinite levels to which they mount. And in all its practice, Hatha Yoga keeps these in view. The two main members of its physical discipline, to which the others are mere accessories, are asana, the habituating of the body to certain attitudes of immobility, and pranayama, the regulated direction and arrestation by exercises of breathing of the vital currents of energy in the body. The physical being is the instrument, but the physical being is made up of two elements, the physical and the vital. The body, which is the apparent instrument and the basis, and the life energy, prana, which is the power and the real instrument. Both of these instruments are now our masters. We are subject to the body. We are subject to the life energy. It is only in a very limited degree that we can, though souls, though mental beings, at all pose as their masters. We are bound by a poor and limited physical nature. We are bound, consequently, by a poor and limited life power. Limited life power, which is all that the body can bear or to which it can give scope. Moreover, the action of each and both in us is subject not only to the narrowest limitations, but to a constant impurity, which renews itself every time it is rectified, and to all sorts of disorders, some of which are normal, a violent order, part of our ordinary physical life, others abnormal, its maladies and disturbances. With all this Hatha Yoga has to deal, all this has to overcome, and it does it mainly by these two methods, complex and cumbrous in action, but simple in principle and effective. The Hatha Yogic system of asana has at its basis two profound ideas, which bring with them many effective implications. The first is that of control by physical immobility. The second is that of power by immobility. The power of physical immobility is as important in Hatha Yoga as the power of mental immobility in the Yoga of Knowledge, and for parallel reasons. To the mind unaccustomed to the deeper truths of our being and nature, they would both seem to be a seeking after the listless passivity of inertia. The direct contrary is the truth. For yogic passivity, whether of mind or body, is a condition of the greatest increase, possession, and continence of energy. The normal activity of our minds is, for the most part, a disordered restlessness, full of waste and rapidly tentative expenditure of energy in which only a little is selected for the workings of the self-mastering will. Waste, be it understood, from this point of view, not that of universal nature, in which what is to us waste serves the purposes of her economy. The activity of our bodies is a similar restlessness. It is the sign of a constant inability of the body to hold even the limited life energy that enters into or is generated in it, and consequently of a general dissipation of this pranic force, with a quite subordinate element of ordered and well-economized activity. Moreover, in the consequent interchange and balancing between the movement and interactions of the vital energies normally at work in the body and their interchange with those which act upon it from outside, whether the energies of others or of the general pranic force variously active in the environment, there is a constant precarious balancing and adjustment, which may at any moment go wrong. Every obstruction, every defect, every excess, every lesion creates impurities and disorders. Nature manages it all well enough for her own purposes, when left to herself. But the moment the blundering mind and will of the human being interfere with her habits and her vital instincts and intuitions, especially when they create false or artificial habits, a still more precarious order and frequent derangement become the rule of the being. Yet this interference is inevitable, since man lives not for the purposes of the vital nature in him alone, but for higher purposes, which she had not contemplated in her first balance, and to which she has with difficulty to adjust her operations. Therefore, the first necessity of a greater status or action is to get rid of this disordered restlessness, to still the activity, and to regulate it. The Hatha Yogin has to bring about an abnormal poise of status and action of the body and the life energy, abnormal not in the direction of greater disorder, but of superiority and self-mastery. To be continued.